Welcome to Claret in Conversation. My name is Katie Spester, and our guest today is Hannah Duffy. After graduating from the Manchester School of Theatre, Hannah appeared in various commercials and short films, and most recently became a co-founder of the Bread and Roses Theatre Company, where she has appeared in their new in-house writing night, The Platform. Hannah also helps to host the Bread and Roses Playwrights Circle, as well as stage manages some of the company's shows. Hannah also has a real passion for writing, as she is on the Writers' Lab program at the Soho Theatre. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, what would you call yourself? A theatre founder, a playwright, actress, stage manager? What do you? If you had to reduce it to one word, what would it be?
That's a very good question. I suppose I normally describe myself as an actor, because I guess that's what my training is in. Although I don't particularly mind between actor and actress. I'm not quite sure which is the proper one.
I think there isn't a proper. I think actor is just the more modern. As we degenderize language, actress has become actor.
Yeah. Although some of my friends actually love to be called actresses than actors. Yeah, because they think that women fought for so long to be on the stage that actually we should celebrate the fact that we have actresses.
Oh, an interesting point.
Yeah, really interesting point. But I think I tend to say actor as default. But I guess that's how I would describe myself because of my training being at the Manchester School of Theatre, and it was a straight acting course. And when I was younger, that's all I wanted to be. More recently, I've been trying to venture into the writing side of things. But I suppose that's because I was interested in writing parts for women or parts that I was interested in playing.
I think one of the things that I've discovered, you know, in these series of podcasts about creative professionals is the number of hats we all wear.
Yeah.
You can't just do one thing and do it really, really well.
No.
You also have to do all sorts of other things, write, direct, stage manage, do a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You've got to be so multi-talented that it's kind of, you almost don't want to tell people that, you know, if they're young and frisky, you don't want to kind of say, look, sweetie, you can only act superbly. You also have to be able to read an Excel spreadsheet.
I know, but it's so annoying because if someone had told me that when I was younger, I wouldn't have believed them and would have just thought, oh, well, I'm going to get lucky. I'm just going to be an actor. But actually, I wish I'd got my skates on earlier and had my finger in lots of different pies from a much younger age, because then I think I would have been so much better equipped at coming at things. So, for example, if I'd done a writing course, I don't know, when I was a teenager or alongside my A-levels, then I think I would be a lot less precious and nervous about the writing that I've been doing now.
Can I just point out, this is a podcast, so you can't see Hannah and you can't see me. I'm a pleasant middle-aged lady of a certain age. Hannah's a stunningly gorgeous youngster. Beautiful, beautiful, flawless skin and gorgeous figure and long blonde hair. The idea that she might be, you know, too old to pick these skills up is, you know, my eyes are kind of bugging out of. It's like, I assure you, Hannah, you've got the time. there are a few years left that you can grab these skills.
No, I understand your point, definitely. I know exactly what you mean. I just think there's so much pressure, or I've been feeling, or maybe that's more pressure I've been putting myself, maybe I should say. That why aren't I already amazing, or like why aren't I already amazing at everything, or have mastered everything? But I guess with any kind of creative industry, it's so easy to put yourself down like that.
And well, I think the creative industry actually thrives on two powerful emotions. One is hope against the odds.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second is self-criticism and doubt at a paralyzing level. And they're in a kind of a very bizarre dynamic where they kind of balance each other out somehow. The end result is that you're functional.
Yeah.
But it's not in other professions, I have to say.
Everything written should be read, but it can be confusing knowing how to go about it. Clapham Publishing Services is here to help. www.claphampublishing.com for all your publishing needs.
Welcome back to Claret in Conversation. I'm in conversation with Hannah Duffy today, a woman of many talents in acting and theatre directing. What's your favourite of any of them? Do you have a favourite?
Well, actually, I've never directed anything.
Okay. You've stage managed.
Yes, but only on a couple of shows at the Bread and Roses. And that was mostly because we actually set up the theatre company before I went to Manchester. But so before I did my acting degree. And it was whilst I was away in Manchester that Rebecca Prahl and Valencia Spearpoint and Tessa Hart, the three of them kind of run and manage the theatre together and have turned it into what it is now. So I was there for the kind of birth of it, but actually they've turned it into something that is really remarkable and managed to get the funding and put it all together. I just want to credit them because they're also
fantastic. Absolutely. Bread and Roses, for those of you who don't know, is a pub on Clapham Manor Street in Clapham. And you're a Clapham girl. You're born and raised here and went to local schools and now you're working here, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, it's you've come home.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what's prompted you guys to set up a theatre company? I mean, for heaven's sakes, we're a short bus ride away from the West End. And there's also the Clapham Omnibus, which is at a different rung of the ladder than you guys.
Yeah.
Like, it takes considerable optimism for anybody anywhere to set up a theatre company, but to do it in Clapham with so much competition.
Yeah, I think also at the time that we set it up, the Omnibus wasn't yet the Omnibus. It was still the Clapham Library. So that actually wasn't around. But down the road, we do have the very reputable Theatre 503, which is attached to the Latchmere pub. And that has a great reputation for new writing. And also the pub, the Landor on Landor Road, used to have a theatre above it. It doesn't anymore. But they were kind of our main competitors, especially the Landor, because Theatre 503 is slightly more, like you said about the Omnibus, maybe on a slightly different playing field.
Yeah.
But the Landor Theatre is no longer there. So I think Clapham was really needing somewhere that theatre companies could come and perform, but without having to pay extortionate higher fees. So because the pub is attached to the Battersea and Wandsworth Trade Union Council, it's very kind of egalitarian. All of our shows are run, how do I put this? So everything to do with the theatre company is run in a similar way to the business of the pub and the ethos and the idea of the trade union. So we don't ask visiting theatre companies to put any money up front. We just take a 50-50 box office split. So if a theatre company were wanting to hire out our theatre for a week, maybe 2 weeks, they don't have to pay anything. We just split the ticket sales.
So you both risk, both the theatre company and the pub.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to tell you, I've had several book launches at the Bread and Roses because they've got a really good space. And actually, this sounds like a paid party ad for the Bread and Roses pub. It really isn't. Nobody put me up to this. But we do use it for book launches because it's such a good place for people to come.
Yeah.
And it's much easier for the author and for me, the publisher. You know, like, I don't have to worry about how many people show up, for instance, because there's enough food and beer for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
The spaces are big enough. Mm-hmm. There's a microphone already in place for the for everybody to speak into and to use. It's wheelchair accessible.
Yeah.
And Bread and Roses doesn't charge me anything because, of course, the understanding is that the people I bring in will be spending money.
Yeah.
So it kind of works out well for me too.
Yeah. It's a really great space, and what I love about it is that it's a real community vibe.
Yes.
And it feels like the epicenter of a community. I worked there for 6 years, and it was during that time that we set up the theatre company. And I have been drinking in there for years as a result. And also, because I went to the primary school just at the back of the pub, if my dad wasn't at work, he would sometimes pick me up from school with one of my friend's dads and one of my friends. And they'd take us to the pub and we'd play in the garden. So I've got really fond memories of being really young there.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it's really nice.
That's almost like Coronation Street, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Or like Southenders.
You know, like people, in the rest of the world, nobody actually believes pubs are like that.
No, but they can be. Yeah.
Yeah. Does the pub do only new work, or do you do classics? Any Noel Coward, any Shakespeare, or is it strictly new writing?
Well, we do both. So it depends whether or not it's an in-house production. So whether it's a Bread and Roses Theatre Company production or whether or not it's a visiting company that are bringing a show to perform. So the types of performances that the Bread and Roses Theatre Company have done have been a real mixture. So recently we did an in-house production of a play called The Black Eye Club, which my friend Rebecca Pryle, who co-founded and is also the managing director of the Bread and Roses Theatre Company, she starred in. And the play went really well. It was a sellout run. And that was a piece of new writing that had won our Bread and Roses Playwriting Award.
Wonderful.
Yeah. But then equally, a couple of years before, we did a play called Dirty Butterfly by Debbie Tucker Green. And before that, Miss Julie, which is obviously an absolute classic. So we do kind of chop and change. But a lot, and it's the same with the visiting companies that perform as well. So recently we had a production of Macbeth that was on at the Bread and Roses, but equally we have, yeah, lots of new writing coming through as well, which makes it really exciting.
That's wonderful. You get, especially for a community, a community-based theatre, a theatre that is embedded in the community, because you can only consume so many Shakespeares.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and before you think, oh, okay, great, that's wonderful. Anything else in the English repertory?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So it's nice to get a new writing out. I think it's really important.
It's interesting to hear fresh voices.
Absolutely. So, Hannah, I always ask all of my guests if they have had any one particular seminal moment or piece of art or an experience that has made them embark on this very uncertain life of being an of being a creative artist. Was it one for you?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this, and I actually think it probably harks back to when I was really, really young, maybe kind of 5 or 6, and I went to watch the ballet. So my late father worked at the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, as does my uncle still, and my brother and my cousins have all worked there at various points as well, as well as a lot of my dad's and my uncle's really best childhood friends from back up in Manchester. Anyway, so it's always felt like home. And I remember an experience of going to see, I think it was when the Opera House closed for refurbishments, which is around the same time when my dad was picking me up from school and taking me straight to the Bread and Roses. And yeah, I think it's about 5 or 6, maybe 7. And I went to go and watch something at the Royal Albert Hall. And I think it was Jonathan Cope dancing with Sylvie Guillaume.
Oh.
And Jonathan, of course, also until recently lived in Clapham. So his garden used to back onto our garden before they moved. And my brother and I were very good friends with his 2 children as well, and we all used to play together. Anyways, we went to watch him dance. He was the principal dancer at the Royal Ballet. And we went to the Royal Albert Hall, and I remember afterwards going backstage with my brother, or maybe it was at the interval, but I would have thought it would be backstage, otherwise there probably wouldn't have been time. And I remember we sat on the Queen's toilet, or the toilet that supposedly she uses when she goes there. And we also went into Sylvie Guillaume's dressing room, and she was smoking, because of course...
No!
Yeah, and in those days, you could smoke as much as you wanted. And her publicist or her assistant or someone that was in there with her was like, Sylvie, why don't you put out the cigarettes for the children? And she just looked at us and was like, no, they're fine. And I mean, it was perfectly nice. We got autographs and everything, but it was quite an experience.
She's, you lucky thing.
I know,
I'm deeply, deeply envious. I would have loved to have seen Sylvia Guillaume dance. I mean, as well as Jonathan Cole. I mean, like, what an experience
to
have.
I know, so cool. And I guess because of the fact that my dad and my uncle's working backstage, we got to spend a lot of time backstage. I mean, obviously in lieu of when the Opera House was closed, but also before and after, kind of going back and hanging out with my dad's friends. And I think that all those experiences are really what kind of cemented theatre for me as being a
the performing arts.
Yeah, it's such an exciting industry to be in. Everything's buzzy and...
Yeah, it's very alive, isn't
it? It's so alive, yeah, exactly.
It's, I think it's probably my very favourite form
really?
Of art. You know, I mean, I love movies. Don't get me wrong. I love movies. I love listening to live music. Mm. Don't get me wrong. But there's something about the theater where people are acting, and you've got the intentional suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
So you go into there knowing that you're being asked to use your imagination.
Yeah.
And you do. And it's just such a pleasure. Whereas movies are now so extraordinary with the CGI special effects, it doesn't require any imagination.
No, you're right.
You just sit in a darkened theater and it's all done for you.
Yeah.
But theater, there's something very primal about it.
Mm.
Something timeless.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And there's something about sitting in a room full of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're all sharing the same experience, but reading it completely differently.
Yes, it's a communal, isn't it?
Yeah, there's something really special about that. And apart from anything, it's just a really fun day out. Or
yeah, if nothing else.
Yeah, yeah. And often takes you somewhere that is going to, I don't know, it's nice going to the theatre and then for a meal or for a drink. Or, and then you can digest it with the person that you're watching it with.
Yeah.
Whereas the cinema, I feel like the cinema often sparks less conversation.
Yes. Although, you know, I mean, I suppose if we went to those European, you know, the ones that where nothing happens
for that's
2 hours
that's
and
true.
People agonize about the meaning of life and you kind of walk to the end of it and you think, well, that's 2 hours of my life. I'm not ever going to get back. But, so, do you have a favorite playwright?
That's a good question, actually. I suppose it depends from time to time. I've been reading a lot of Tracy Letts, who's actually an American playwright, and I've never seen one of his plays performed, but
his name is Tracy and he's a man.
Tracy Letts. I've only ever read his play, so I'd love to see some, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's my favorite.
He's just caught your attention
at
the moment.
He's got my attention at the moment.
Fair enough. I find it awkward when people say to me, you know, what's your very favorite book you've ever read? And you think, wow, you know, it's a Tuesday in a month that starts with J. It's, oh, no, wait, it's reading, it's something else.
Yeah.
You know, like it's very hard for me to pin that down. So
yeah, and there's definitely plays that I've read or that I've seen that I absolutely have loved. But then sometimes then you read another thing by the author and you,
right.
you think,
not quite there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I have that with the more recent Tom Stoppard plays.
Oh, okay.
I used to love him when I was your age.
Right, okay.
And when he was my age. And now, I don't know, and I don't know whether he's changed or I've changed. Or, but you just kind of look and you roll your eyes and you think, oh.
Right, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, which is a bit of it feels a bit like a mourning him and he hasn't died yet. Yeah, it's like, oh, I used to really love your stuff. And is there any particular, anything that you are especially proud of that you think, I mean, you're very young, so you may want to say, just give me a couple of decades, Katie, and I'll get back to you. But is there anything so far that you're especially proud of that you think you've contributed to the arts?
I actually was looking at my CV, trying to see if there was anything on there that I thought would be worth noting. But I don't know. I think if I'd written something and had it performed, I'd like to write something and finish it, because that's my biggest issue at the moment.
So I think many writers struggle to finish what they've started.
Okay, that's encouraging. Thank you. So hopefully. Hopefully I'll be proud of something that I've written very soon. But there's definitely been things that I've performed in that I've felt really proud of. I was on tour with a theatre company called Gone to the Dogs this year. We've been on two tours actually so far this year. And it's a children's theatre show written by Miranda Duffy called Rocks, Paper and the Scissors.
Any relation to you?
Yes, she's my aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote and directed the play, and I was playing the main character. And the play was aimed at 7 to 14-year-olds, and it's teaching them about politics, which I think is really interesting. Yeah, and definitely timely.
No kidding. How do you teach 7 to 12-year-olds about politics?
So it's about three characters all vying to be school president, and each of them represents a kind of different leadership style.
Okay.
So one is kind of Putin-esque.
Okay, very authoritarian.
Yeah, exactly. Very dictatorial and lots of scare tactics. Mm-hmm. One is more sort of representative of a populist government or Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And the other is kind of a Theresa May, David Cameron, more kind of straight down the line version of what might be classed as British politicians, I suppose.
More representative democracy and trying to find a middle ground that hears all the voices and triangulates to get some kind of policy that
exactly
appeases enough people enough of the time that you can move forward.
Yeah. So the three characters are trying to be school president and there's a vote at the end of the play mm-hmm. and all the children in the audience vote.
And how do they vote?
Well, my character who's playing the paper, who's the straight down the line democratic leader, actually came out and won.
Woohoo!
Woo!
Yeah, yay democracy!
I know, exactly. It's quite encouraging.
So the kids have a better grasp of it than our government.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So we had ballot papers and pencils underneath each chair. So the tour went on for a few weeks and we were kind of, the ballot box was getting heavier and heavier. We had it sealed. And then we counted all the votes at the end.
Well, I like that. It's very interactive.
Yeah, really interactive and felt like it was a very important thing to be doing.
Yes, yes. And I think it's, I mean, let's start them young. Since our world is becoming increasingly complex, let's nail the basics of how democracy works as early as possible. You know, let's not kick this into the long grass.
Yeah, yeah. But it's interesting because no one, well, when I was at school, we didn't learn about that at all. It was only through my parents, really, that mm-hmm. I kind of based my voting on. And
but I do think that's one of the failures of our society right now is we've become so relaxed, almost lackadaisical about democracy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That we've stopped teaching ourselves about it. You know, there's no civics lessons anymore. There's no explanation about how parliamentary democracy works. What's the difference between democracy and populism? What's the difference between populism and authoritarianism? What's, you know, that's all kind of considered to be quite unnecessary.
Which is part of the reason why I was feeling so proud to be a part of the show is because I've learned more researching the characters and researching mm-hmm. the fundamental like political ideals behind what inspired my aunt to write the play. And I've learned more doing that than I ever would have done at school.
Yes, well.
So,
which is, you know, I suppose that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sooner or later we all get it. Yeah. You know, it's, there's nothing like doing it and explaining it to others to for the lesson to really kind of
sink in.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think that's really interesting. And how many schools do you think you hit all total,
that's
approximately?
That's a really good question. I don't know, maybe 15.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, we were performing, we were kind of touring around Yorkshire and we went into one school and did a performance and the other performances we were doing in theatres and schools in those areas would come and watch. So we were in Scarborough, in Richmond, North Yorkshire. We performed at Wetherby High in Wetherby, obviously. Performed in Leeds, York, Harrogate. Yeah, and it was really great. Really, really great.
Do you intend to continue acting?
Yes.
Do you have an agent?
So I recently left my agent, but I'm on the hunt for a new one, which is exciting. So I suppose because I've been doing so much, or not so much, obviously, not as much as I'd like, but predominantly mm-hmm. theatre work, it's been slightly more tricky for me to get a showreel together. So that's my next.
Yeah, yeah, you have to line these ducks up.
Yeah, exactly.
And have, which is an American expression, probably won't mean anything to the English. Do you know that expression?
Line your ducks up? We say get all your ducks in a row.
Yeah, get all your ducks in a row.
Same thing.
So then you can start pitching yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bloody bore, but it's got to be done.
Oh, absolutely. It's got to be done. It's got to be done.
And hopefully you'll be able to get an agent then.
Yeah, exactly. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, and then we'll see more of you on, maybe even TV. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And if not, then we'll continue to see you at Bread and Roses Theatre.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's in Clapham Manor Street in Clapham. Mm-hmm. And how often do you put a production on there?
Well, I got a message today from Rebecca saying that they're doing a show in November, but I'm not quite sure if that's a Bread and Roses Theatre Company show or just a visiting production.
I see.
But there's plays on most days of the week, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That often?
Yeah.
So and is it subscription? Like, how would I find out about this?
Just go on the Bread and Moses Theatre website, yeah.
Okay. And then...
Which is breadandmosestheatre.co.uk.
There we go. breadandmosestheatre.co.uk. Good. I'll do that. You know, it's kind of, you know, what am I going to do tonight? I know. I'll just see what's going on at Bread and Moses Theatre.
Yeah, so quite often the shows will come from Monday to Saturday.
Yes.
And then often there's not a show on the Sunday, but anyone can book out. In fact, no, I'm saying that completely wrong. Most days of the week, there's a show.
So okay.
It's, more often than not, it's the visiting company show.
Yes.
But we do obviously put on our in-house productions. Yeah, most days of the week, there's something on.
So tell me, what are you writing?
Oh, God, that's a very good question. I've been trying to write a few different things. So I had an idea. I was thinking it'd be a good idea to write a one-woman show, but started writing it and hated it. So I kind of scrapped it. Okay. Or I've been feeling like maybe it's a good idea for me to take some time and then go back to it.
It's a different muscle, I'll tell you, Hannah. It's
the
a different
writing, yeah.
You know, I would imagine that acting's one, stage managing's another, the organizational work to set up a theatre company is another muscle, and then writing is a different muscle altogether. It, which is exhausting to continually having to find new muscles and exercise them and perform at a high level. It's just absolutely, you know, it's just exhausting to do.
Yeah. And I think I was hoping that writing would be a lot more easy than it is.
Oh, it's for nobody is. It's easy.
It's so difficult.
Yeah, nobody finds it easy.
No. And because I did the Soho Theatre course, I was really pleased to get onto, but that finished last July, so not this summer, but the summer before, so year long. And after that, I still hadn't finished the piece that I'd been working on. I got kind of in a flap about it. And I think, again, I was putting a lot of pressure on myself and was expecting it to be so much better than it was. And actually, I should have just given myself a bit of a break and realised that,
absolutely.
Hey, this is your first time trying to do this. It's fine.
I give you a piece of advice that somebody once gave me. He says, we all build up in our mind writing as being this huge wall we have to scale, like a mountain. And you know, we keep thinking if we just get some crampons and some ropes and some mountaineering skills, we'll do a better job of it. We have to get all these skills or otherwise we're not going to make it to the top of Mount Everest, much less down alive.
Yeah.
Change the way you think about it. It's not Mount Everest. It's a barrier you step over. That's all. Just a barrier you step over. You don't need special training. You don't need crampons and ropes. You don't need to be tied into a team. And if you change kind of the way you envision the task, then it just becomes something you do.
That's really interesting, actually.
My first book, which is, this is all academic. He said, all young people get over emotionally involved in the creation of their first book. And they also think it's the magus opus.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's just an exercise.
Yeah, this is really ringing a lot of truth.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, just make it a barrier you step over. It's not going to be the last thing you ever write. It's not going to be your magus opus.
Yeah.
It's just a task. And you sit down and you write it and you think, now what did I learn from that?
Yeah.
Now let's rewrite it. Because, you know, to quote Stephen King, to write is human, but to edit is divine.
Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah.
There's no such thing as a good first draft.
Yeah, I've definitely learned that the hard way.
Yeah. So good luck with all of that, Hannah.
Thank
I look
you
forward
so much.
To your forthcoming projects, whether it's something you've stage managed, something you've acted in, or something you've written. I'm very excited about the possibility of seeing you in action.
Thank you.
Yeah. And until then, we can look forward to see what else Bread and Roses Theatre puts out for us.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.